The remainder of the service is going to be turned over now to a woman who needs no introduction, really. But I am going to say that this is Rebecca Gammons, our longtime beloved director of religious exploration, over 20 years helping our children learn about who they are as Unitarians, and retiring finally to a new challenge, new life, no problems, maybe challenges, but no problems, right? 30 years ago, I walked in these doors for the first time. I was the mother of five young children seeking a faith community. I'd grown up in one, and I knew the pleasures of extended faith family. I took comfort in the rituals. I loved the potlucks and social events. My husband and I had tried several different churches and denominations over the years, but kept tripping over the theology. I wanted support for our family's liberal values, and I bristled when my son was told on the school bus that he was going to hell because he hadn't been saved. Walking into WUF, I was immediately taken by the trees. I remember thinking, if this sermon is boring, I can just revel in nature outside my window. However, the sermon that day was very interesting, as was the service itself. My daughter, Allison, came running from the kindergarten class with, "Can we come back next week? We're going to..." And so we did. In 2 months, I will walk out these doors, saying goodbye, at least for a while, to this community that has nourished me and helped grow my children. I walk out a very different person than the one who walked in. I'm more confident, more skilled. I've worked with many kinds of people in many interesting situations. I've had the pleasure of officiating over life rituals, from blessing ceremonies to weddings to memorials. I've had spiritual experiences, and I've worked hard to view life from a framework of spirit. I've watched our UU kids grow into adults who carry our values into the world. And while retirement brings the promise of many good things, it has also been the catalyst that has helped me realize how challenging change can be. My initial thought, when I thought about this service over a year ago, was that it would be about letting go, of course with equanimity and grace. Nice idea. But I'm discovering that I'm a mere beginner on that course. I'm realizing that change is the culprit challenging me, along with its buddy, fear. Change is not as easy to manage as I, or as any of us, might wish. Today I'm going to share with you some of my learnings about change, both institutionally here at WUF and personally as I try to learn to navigate it more gracefully. We all experience change in our lives. We're bombarded by it. Sometimes it takes so much bandwidth to deal with the day-to-day things that it's easy to feel overwhelmed when something else pops in. I wonder if any of you could identify with the child in the story today. Of course, some people thrive on change and eagerly look forward to the new adventure, not seeing it as a problem at all. I've known such people. However, I'm not one of them. I know that I take change in increments, slowly. I'm capable of embracing it, but it doesn't come naturally. I've learned that even happy changes can bring feelings of loss. It's interesting how the simplest change can set the wheels in motion. Walking through WUF's doors that Sunday in 1987 changed my life. I had five children, and I rapidly ended up volunteering in the religious education program. Within a few years, I became a paid RE teacher. This was the first change. Little did I know where it would take me. WUF was a family-friendly congregation that engaged in many outdoor activities. There were hikes and camping and canoe trips. Life made fewer demands on family weekends then than it does now. And we valued those multi-generational outdoor activities. We joined WUFers camping at Waldo Lake for Labor Day, and it led to a family tradition that still persists, although it's been a while for me. For 17 years, I took my children for a two-week Waldo Lake campout preceding Labor Day. I have very fond memories of the assistance and companionship as I got to know woofers of all ages on these trips. It was at Waldo that I recharged my batteries for the coming year. I loved living by the natural rhythm of night and day, and I was nurtured by the simplicity of our lives there. It was at Waldo Lake that I first came to know the spiritual restorative power of nature. It was also one year at Waldo Lake that I happened to notice someone out on a peninsula doing Tai Chi. The grace of the movement struck me and ultimately encouraged me to learn this practice. The idea of personal spiritual practices would never have occurred to me had it not been for some adult RE classes that I took during my early years here. I find that life is richer and smoother when I'm actively engaged in that aspect of my life. Change sometimes creeps up on us. Often, when we think it has come on suddenly, we realize that, in fact, things have been changing for a long time. But, like the child in the story, we've been doing our best to ignore it. I noticed this in my marriage. I tried denial for a long time, but periodically something would happen in my life to remind me how unhappy I was. It took a number of years and quite a few such incidents before I was willing to leave my comfortable bubble and begin to address the problem. We sometimes ignore change until we can't any longer. WUF in the late 80s looked fairly similar to how it looks today. Forest Hall and the patio area had been constructed a year or two before I arrived, and everyone was very proud of it, as members and friends had done most of the work themselves. On arriving at WUF, however, you had to climb a set of stairs to get into the foyer in the sanctuary, then known as Fellowship Hall. We were in our 30s, able-bodied, and thought nothing of it. But change was afoot. Excuses of, well, no one attends who can't do stairs, soon met the reality that people stopped coming when they couldn't do stairs. So the decision was made to create the ramp and entryway that you walked up today. I got to experience that do-it-yourself feeling as I rode a jackhammer, tamping down the rocks in the base of the ramp. It was really fun. I vibrated for a long time afterwards. In 1995, as the district librarian, I attended a district meeting to share the library resources. Religious educators chatted as they perused the materials, and they encouraged me to apply for the opening here for a director of religious education. A former teacher, I'd never thought about doing this, but the idea seemed like a good one, and the rest is history, and launched a rather sudden series of changes as I embarked on a new career path with all the complexities of being a working mom. WUF had strong feelings about the inclusion of all voices in every decision. We saw this consensus-seeking as one of our strong points. We were challenged when we discovered that we had a sexual predator in our midst. Fortunately, he had not offended in our community, but his unwillingness to comply with restrictions made it clear that we could not allow him to remain here. I was privileged to be at a meeting where a number of members shared their personal traumas around these issues. The palpable feeling of raw emotion in the air was like anything I had ever experienced. We did our best to hear and honor all voices during this process while protecting our children and our community. There were a few voices that spoke out about his innate worth and dignity and the wrong of excluding any member. But ultimately, we had to decide to deny him access to our premises with 6 dissenting votes. Sometimes not changing means limiting our capabilities and missing out on opportunities. WUF had a policy about not taking stands. There was concern that taking a stand as a congregation could be divisive and diminish the voices of those who felt differently. One year, there was an anti-gay issue on the ballot. Many local liberal congregations listed their names on a full-page Oregonian ad that opposed this legislation. Many at WUF were frustrated that our name wasn't among them. Our policies and our processes were too cumbersome to allow such actions. They hampered our ability to live our beliefs. Despite this, WUF considered itself very social justice oriented. Members talked about protests and marches. There were active participants in racial justice initiatives and peace programs. Many congregants were involved personally in work that helped the common good, WUF was a congregation of people who did make a difference. But each person did their own thing, and WUF was an entity that did not coalesce as a place that did social action together. This is no longer the case, and our Social Justice Committee works diligently to provide congregational opportunities for service in many different ways. We are stronger because of the things we can do together. But changing this took time and deliberate energy. We now can speak in one voice about the injustices of the world. We proudly march in the Gay Pride Parade, and we use our combined energies to be a beacon of light. I've learned we ignore change knocking at our door at our own peril. Our health can suffer. Systems that once worked begin to break down, and we're unprepared to deal with that. Children grow up, and they do things their own way. The list goes on and on. We are not in control. 30 years ago, we had over 100 children registered in our RE program. The average family had 2 to 3 children, owned their own home, and many had a parent who stayed at home. The many social gatherings and multi-generational activities were well attended. We had a thriving adult RE program and plenty of volunteers. In 1999, our coming-of-age program had over 12.5 volunteers helping make this program vital. Nowadays, a family of 3 is considered large, and many of our families only have 1 child. We're fortunate, though, to have seen all kinds of diversity in our family configurations. But many of the adults in our families are not only working but also attending school. Families of older children are inundated with rehearsals and practices and after-school activities. Everybody is stretched. Many are still seeking community, but energy for volunteer activities is far less than it once was. And many families come to church for the respite and spiritual uplift, not as another venue to do volunteer work. It's change. Our stories have power in shaping our realities. When I first came to WUF, the congregation still suffered wounds from an unsuccessful experience of ministry decades earlier. The stories I heard shaped my experience of WUF, and I was very surprised some years later during our 50th anniversary celebration to learn that many people reflected on positive ministerial experiences. This really hammered home for me the lessons about becoming the stories that we tell. My vision of what WUF was like during those years before my time came from those who'd been disenchanted. But obviously, that had not been everyone's story. It is said if we can change our story, we can change our lives. I believe there's some truth in that. We need to be careful to not allow our stories to limit our possibilities. WUFers were proud of being a do-it-yourself congregation and of being just fine without a minister. Both of these basic truths have changed over the years. We've learned that in today's world, relying on volunteer efforts to accomplish everything we hope to achieve is no longer feasible. We've learned how professional ministry can empower our lay leadership, offering us inspiration and skills to grow. And we've learned that growth is not just about numbers. We've learned how to manage conflict and to move forward so that we can engage in some of the deeper reasons we are here as Unitarian Universalists. I am so proud to see the healthy place that this has become. Of course, we aren't perfect, but we acknowledge our growing edges, and we continue to grow and learn together as our principles guide us to do. While the outcomes are very positive, though, sometimes the process has been messy. Sometimes very messy. I'm reminded that we didn't get here easily and that it was sometimes hard to let go of the old ways. Whenever big decisions were made, patient people offered many chances for us to discuss, to try to understand each other, and to offer input. We practiced flexibility and new ways of looking at things. Sometimes it's taken time to get most everybody on board. And I know that various decisions over the years have been very hurtful to some individuals. I'm learning that that is also part of the change process. Pema Chodron, in her book Living Beautifully with Uncertainty and Change, sums it up so well in the quote you just heard. What a predicament. We are doomed to suffer simply because we have a deep-seated fear of how things really are. Fear. Like the child in our story, fear can intensify our feelings and we can become irrational in its grasp. Change experts talk about awfulizing. I'm familiar with this, going down the rabbit hole of the worst possible scenario. How should we respond when we know that this change really means the end of the world as we know it? Worst of all, fear lies. It allows us to believe things that aren't true, and it gives really bad advice. Finally, our child in the story just had to face it. Sometimes, just naming that which we fear takes away some of its power. My father died in April a few years ago, starting a cascade of events that resulted in moving my mother here from Connecticut. She died in December of that year, about 8 months later. I began experiencing anxiety, not unusual for oldest children after their parents are gone, but increased drastically this winter as our dog began having serious health issues. A friend asked why I was so anxious about this, and I blurted out, "I am not having anything else die on my watch." Yes. And as soon as those words tumbled out of my mouth, I indeed realized their absurdity, as if I had any control over any of it. And I knew when I was in Connecticut that I was taking that last watch. This was crazy talk. And all of a sudden, that bubble of anxiety deflated just a little bit. Fear of the unknown is strong, though. We cling to the familiar, even though the shifting sands make that harder and harder to do. And ultimately, change has its way. So how do we cope with this fear? How do we cope with changes that we cannot influence? I've discovered for myself that sometimes the answer to stopping that downward spiral is as simple as an infusion of protein. A tablespoon of peanut butter can turn my outlook from grim to hopeful in 15 minutes. Seriously. And I know I'm not alone in this. Protein's one of my first go-tos. Another useful tool, however, has been the Serenity Prayer, attributed to Reinhold Niebuhr and a basic of recovery work. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. In stressful times of my life, I have driven around repeating this prayer as a mantra, reminding myself that I can only do the things I can do, and I can't change other people, only myself. Resistance to change is good sometimes. Sometimes it's appropriate. Or like in these days, even necessary. But the trick comes in differentiating which outcomes can we influence and when are we just beating our heads against the wall. Working with our youth has been one of the highlights of my time as your DRE. Though the specifics of the group change from week to week, the universal is that our UU kids are awesome. I've learned so much from being in their presence, and it has often refilled my cup with hope. If they're our future, we're in good hands. They have also taught me to be open to the unexpected. I took a particularly rambunctious group 1 year of our middle schoolers to a labyrinth workshop held at Trinity Episcopal Church downtown. As we prepared to walk the labyrinth, the facilitator explained how some folks crawled it or walked backwards, and I cringe to imagine how some of our creative youth might choose to maneuver this labyrinth. My main goal was to keep our youth from embarrassing us, and I anticipated a very perfunctionary labyrinth experience for myself. We were instructed to consider a problem in our lives as we walked towards the center, to wait in the middle for the answer, and to contemplate the solutions as we walked our way back to the world. In my other life, I was currently site council parent for the magnet school my daughters attended, and I was deeply embroiled in battle. I was the intermediary between enraged and fearful parents and a principal who was adamant about totally changing the character of the school. I had been walking around feeling as if I was carrying cement bags on my shoulders, and I knew that this was soon going to be impacting my health. This was the problem I took with me as I walked into the labyrinth. I stood in the middle, waiting. And then suddenly, I physically felt that weight lifted from my shoulders. I recognized this was what my Christian friends would call God taking it from me. Whatever it was real. And I walked out knowing that all I could do was to be a pebble in this woman's shoe, calling her on her lies when appropriate, being present and holding her accountable. Suddenly, I had the wisdom to know the difference, and that was all that I could do. I have talked to this congregation before about a gratitude practice and how that helped me see my cup as half full rather than half empty. But knowing what helps isn't always enough. This winter, when I was really down, I found it challenging to find anything to feel grateful for. And one day, again, I heard myself saying out loud, "Well, fear won today." I stopped short immediately. I realized I didn't want that to become a habit. But help always seems to come when we really need it. And a short time later, I was introduced to Thich Nhat Hanh's book, Fear, the Essential Wisdom for Getting Through the Storm. Early in the book, I was struck by his experience. One day, I was waking, and I felt something like an umbilical cord linking me to the sun in the sky. And I saw very clearly that if the sun was not there, I would die right away. Then I saw an umbilical cord linking me to the river, and I knew if the river wasn't there, I would also die because there would be no water for me to drink. And I saw an umbilical cord linking me to the forest. The trees in the forest were creating oxygen for me to breathe. Without the forest, I would die. And I saw an umbilical cord linking me to the farmer who grows the vegetables and the wheat and rice that I cook and eat. And he goes on to talk about the daily prayers in his village that they say when they wake, when they brush their teeth, prayers for using the car and using the computer. I sat down with my morning cup of tea, and I reflected on how the universe conspired to bring it to me. The sun and rain that grew the plants, the farmer who tended and harvested it, even the corporation that got it from there to here, the water that flows from my tap, the cup in my hand that has meaning to me. And somehow I was able to remember that feeling of being held by the universe, of seeing how so many things fall into place just so I could enjoy my cup of tea. Change is inevitable and irrevocable. We get older, families break up, loved ones die, even dream jobs end. But I came to WEF as a young mother, and I lost Sunday mornings, but I found a loving community to help raise my children and a career path that I loved. In our story today, the secret of change is that it's part of the yin and yang of life, the duality that embraces the happy and sad, the peaceful and the challenging, all as part of the whole. In these past 30 years, I've watched my children grow and choose their life paths, and I'm pleased with the choices they have made. I'm on amicable terms with their father. Soon I will become a grandmother, and people tell me that I will then see things in a whole nother new way. I've said goodbye to people I've loved, I've lost my parents, and at times my sense that all will be well with the world. Sometimes that fear wants to overwhelm me, despite all the tools I have to keep it at bay. But more and more I choose hope. I look around at the lives I have touched, the people I care about. I walk in my garden and nourish my soul. I pet my dog or chat with a friend or feel the sun on my bones, and I know that life is good. I can choose to do those things that will help me feel better, and I know that. It's said we can't have light without darkness, good without bad. And it's time. I saw on Facebook recently this meme, which really spoke to me. I found that if you just throw yourself off the cliff of fear, it's usually about a 1 foot drop. And I think about the times in my life that I have found this to be true, and I am reassured. Change is as inevitable as death and taxes. So despite my fear, as the time comes to move on to this next chapter in my life, I guess I'll just take a deep breath and jump.
We are glad and we are grateful. And if you have some questions or some comments that you'd like to record, I'll come back around with the mic.
I've known you a long time since we gardened together. And I've been retired a long time. And I know that you'll find you wondered how you had time to be a religious educator.
Thank you. One of my fond memories, gardening with you.
Thank you. That was just absolutely wonderful. I really, really enjoyed it. Two things that stuck out. One was the talking about that after some of those bad situations that happen, the evolution, that finding out that there were people that didn't have that problem. And it's I was struck by it for some reason. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of that, the flip side of it, when you said when things come along when you least expect it, when you're needing it. We tend to remember the questions that we got wrong on tests and the bad things that happened, but then when we really need the help, we look for the positive. And I was wondering if you'd ever figured out how to look for the positive when things are still going good, but you know, and not settle on those negatives. Or you know,
a work in progress. The thing that has helped me the most is the gratitude practice. Is every day just noting, you know, writing down three good things that happened. Sometimes it's hard. If you can do it consistently, I find that it actually changes the way I look at things. I go through the day and go, oh, there's another good thing. There's another good thing. So everything is happening just the same, but where I'm putting my focus is different. And trying to learn to be open, but I suspect I've got another 20, 30 years to practice that still.
Hi, Rebecca. Thank you. I was struck by how things that you, the same kinds of things that you reflect on having learned are the same things that you do such an inspiring job of exemplifying. And it was kind of funny to even think that you even felt like those were things you needed to learn because you demonstrate them so wonderfully. And that in itself is inspiring because it's not like anyone has to have things all figured out in order to be wise. And in fact, in the course of your struggle, you're throwing off wisdom as a byproduct to everybody around you.
Well, thank you. The secret is that when we're, and I'm sure everybody who's here does this, when you're working, when you're out there, you put your best forward. The fears and the everything, you kind of tamp them down because, you know, that's not what you want to show. Then when you're alone in private, they come out and say, you forgot this. But thank you. I'm glad I've baked it so well for so long.
I'm not sure that it's faking at all. I think what happens, and there is a belief that we teach best what we most need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, it's weird. I feel like I've known you my entire life.
this is my son.
it's really cool being able to hear you talk about this, and so one question is why you got to make me cry. But what I really want to say is hearing you going through these things and talking about it, it's really strange for me because growing up, my friends would come over, skip school, and you wouldn't bust them. But they'd hang out with you and talk, and like girlfriends, everyone in my life, anyone who knows you, always learns from you and gets spiritual meaning and guidance from you. And on behalf of them and myself, thank you. I love you.
After almost 28 years of retirement, I've finally come up with my mantra, is taking every day one step at a time.
Good advice.
Thank you again, Rebecca.